everyone. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show. It is Friday, so even if the weather sucks, at least you got the weekend. Hopefully, wherever you are, the phone number, if you'd like to be a part of this here program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. We've got to begin with, well, what do you want to call it? I'm calling it stray voltage. You have no idea what I'm talking about. I am about to educate you in ways you have not been educated before in talk radio. Nope, we're not talking power issues. And you know, I got to give credit where credit is due. A friend of mine is Megyn Kelly's producer. He worked at CNN when I was at CNN. He worked with Piers Morgan for a while, actually, at CNN. Steve Krakauer, great guy, genuinely good guy. Has worked at The Blaze, good guy, knows the media inside and out. And he reminded me, he's got an email, and he reminded me in his email of David Plouffe's idea of stray voltage. Stray voltage is a political idea of, you know, something bad is coming. You need to distract everybody so nobody pays attention to it. They pay attention to the stray voltage. Because, you know, stray voltage fires things up, stirs things up, can cause short circuits, cannot be good, and you gotta pay attention to it. So during the Obama years, David Plouffe was a strategist for Barack Obama. He's now on the outside whispering in Joe Biden's ear in the years of the administration. He's also a lobbyist. But David Plouffe, Obama would come out and do things that distract people from unfavorable news towards the Obama administration. So is the vaccine mandate stray voltage? Steve Krakauer wants to know, and it really makes sense. When you think about the news, no one really talked about it except for me. I spent some time on it. Fox News did. A lot of media outlets buried it or didn't cover it at all. But the stray voltage is the Biden administration comes out, says we're going to mandate vaccines for employers, 100 employees or more. If you don't want to take it, you got to do a nasal swab multiple times a week. Now, pay no attention to the fact that OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration or whatever it is, hazard, whatever, it they don't have the manpower to enforce this. They don't have the manpower for compliance. They don't have the manpower for inspection. They don't have the manpower for it. And there aren't enough supplies out there for unvaccinated people to get tested. And it takes a while for the test unless you do the rapid test, and then it still can take up 15 minutes or longer. It is very, very difficult to administer this, to implement this. There's no, it's an open question as to whether or not it's constitutional. It arguably is really not constitutional. But everybody's focused on it. Everybody's at each other's throat. Everybody's complaining about it. Everybody's arguing about it. You've got the left out there bullying people on the right, demanding you better take this vaccine or else. You've got people in the media out there really out to shame those who do not do it. I did not play the audio yesterday, but here is Don Lemon yesterday on CNN, or day before yesterday on CNN.
And so I think we have to stop coddling people when it comes to this and the vaccine, saying, oh, you can't shame them. You can't call them stupid. You can't call them silly. Yes, they are. The people who aided and abetted Trump are stupid because they believed his big lie. The people who are not getting vaccines, who are believing the lies on the internet instead of science, it's time to start shaming them. What else? Or leave them behind. Because they are keeping the majority of Americans behind.
Don Lemon is overly emotional these days. Got some issues. Wants to shame people. So much for love your neighbor. Doesn't want to love his neighbor. Wants to shame them. If they don't do what Don Lemon wants, there's been blowback even at CNN about Don Lemon's monologue that CNN, whether you think it has or not, CNN has internally prided itself on not being MSNBC, but Don Lemon is the male Joy Reid at this point and wants to shame people over the vaccines, supports the vaccine mandate. They're defending the vaccine mandate, but it's stray voltage. If Steve Krakauer is right, and I think he is, it's stray voltage, because you know what they're not talking about, what they've expressly ignored, what came out the very next day that no one did a good job of covering. Remember the retaliatory strike in Afghanistan? Blew up a suicide bomber? Was revenge for the attack? Well, the military is now confirming what the media had already reported. We didn't blow up a suicide bomber. We blew up a charitable worker for an American nonprofit who was returning home to his family after a day at work trying to help get Afghans out of the country. Yep. It's true. Buried in the news coverage. The media didn't want to touch it. They were so focused on the stray voltage. They were so focused on the vaccine mandate. They never had to touch it. Let me read you now from Steve Krakauer's email. In 2014, Major Garrett wrote a revealing piece for CBS News on a concept created by David Plouffe of the Obama administration known as stray voltage. It was employed during the Obama years as a way to essentially manipulate the public and the media, and it was extremely effective. Stray voltage worked by introducing an idea into the information ecosystem that was specifically designed to cause controversy as a distraction, a diversion, or an opportunity. The theory goes like this. Controversy sparks attention. Attention provokes conversation. Conversation embeds previously unknown or marginalized ideas into the public consciousness, wrote Garrett at the time. Plouffe is now picking up checks as a board member for various companies. He regularly appears on MSNBC. He's not part of the Biden administration, sometimes known as Obama's third term, because of how many former Obama administration officials are already in the mix. And it seems like the stray voltage concept has made its way into the new administration. Last Thursday, President Biden gave a much-hyped speech with new information about COVID rules and regulations that featured one element that has drawn the most attention. Biden's announcement he would require all private companies in America larger than 100 employees to require COVID vaccines on weekly testing. Never mind, this is unenforceable and most likely illegal. It's been the hot topic of debate on cable news and throughout the Acela Corridor media for close to a week. It's not actually going to happen. If it's not actually going to happen, then what does Biden have to gain by introducing it? Well, for those who support vaccine mandates, this is a show of just how tough the president is on those dirty, unvaccinated Americans. It gives the media something to point to as a show that Biden isn't messing around. They happily oblige with the storyline. Now, the question becomes, what's this stray voltage thrown out to controversialize the COVID conversation, feed red meat to the base? What's it meant to distract from? Perhaps we found out the very next day with reports from the New York Times and the Washington Post. As the reports show, the drone strike on August 29th of a supposed ISIS-K operative that led to the deaths of several bystanders because, as the media said, there were likely explosives in the car was actually not a terrorist, but an aid worker. Analysis of the video feeds showed that what the military may have seen was Mr. Ahmadi and a colleague loading canisters of water into his trunk to bring home to the family. At the time, CNBC reported it as, quote, U.S. drone strikes an ISIS-K vehicle packed with explosives in Kabul. That was how it was reported, not according to the military. The next day, reporting by CNN on the family, including children killed in the drone strike, quoted the Pentagon as determining there were secondary explosions. That story has not been updated. CNN never mentioned the confirmation that it wasn't a bomber, never mentioned it on Friday, or they waited until Sunday to acknowledge the report. In fact, CBS was the only network to cover it at all. Yes, it's true. The New York Times and the Washington Post had the story. Times investigation in U.S. drone strike, evidence suggests no ISIS bomb. Subtitle, U.S. officials said a Reaper drone following a car for hours and then fired based on evidence it was carrying explosives. but in-depth video analysis and interviews at the site cast doubt on the account. The Washington Post gave it some attention as well. Here's the Washington Post headline, examining a quote-unquote righteous strike. Subtitle, expert analysis of deadly U.S. drone strikes aftermath in Kabul suggests no evidence of explosives in targeted vehicle. They did a pretty detailed analysis, a forensic analysis at the New York Times and the Washington Post out on the same day. With, in the case of the Washington Post, 6 people collaborating in the reporting. Alex Horton, Sarah Kalin, Dalton Bennett, Joyce Soyoung Lee, Meg Kelly, and Elise Samuels. Yes, you can say if you're progressive. Well, the New York Times and the Washington Post covered it. CBS covered it. Clearly, the Biden administration didn't distract, but we're not talking about front page coverage. And we're not talking about where Americans get their news from the most, ABC, CBS, and NBC. CBS of the three is the lag. CBS lags behind ABC and NBC in their nightly news coverage. CBS gave it a very passing mention. ABC and NBC never covered it. CNN didn't cover it. MSNBC didn't cover it. USA Today, Los Angeles Times, Wall Street Journal, none of them covered it. New York Times and the Washington Post covered it mostly online, not in their print publications. It turns out the drone strike to retaliate for 13 members of the U.S. military being killed, killed an innocent man, and possibly some of his children. Not only was he an innocent man, he worked for an American nonprofit and was helping people escape Afghanistan. But we want to talk about a vaccine mandate. A government that got so wrong who they were killing probably isn't a government that should be trying to force Americans to take a vaccine they don't want. But we're not having that conversation. I think Steve is right. I think Steve Krakauer is right here. I think it is a bit of stray voltage that Joe Biden came out and gave that speech demanding a mandatory vaccine, knowing that the very next day would come the reports that we had killed an innocent man in Afghanistan in retaliation for the suicide bomber killing 13 American soldiers. And the media was played, willingly played. The American public also played. Everyone distracted. You know, I'm reminded again, my interview with Robin Lewinsky. Robin Lewinsky works for WSB Radio in Atlanta, my flagship station. She was the Associated Press's reporter at the bottom of the World Trade Center the morning the planes hit. And in our conversation last week on September 10th, she said that, you know, that these people were plotting in a cave over 8 years while we were distracted by the Republican takeover of Congress, by the Clinton impeachment, by the death of Princess Diana, all of these things we were distracted by, they were single-mindedly focused. Even the Biden administration knows how easily it is to distract Americans and get them squabbling with each other so that we don't pay attention to the real headline here. The Biden administration promised that they could do over-the-horizon attacks and gather intelligence to retaliate. They used this bombing as an example of how we didn't have to be in Afghanistan because we could still launch strikes and blow up the bad people who do things to us. And it turns out we didn't do that. Turns out they lied. It turns out an innocent man died and parts of his family died. And that man was a man who was a hero trying to get people to escape from Afghanistan, help them get out of the country before the Taliban took over, and he lost his life thanks to an over-the-horizon missile strike that the Biden administration said could be done effectively. And now we know it can't, but we're all too busy squabbling over the vaccine mandate to appreciate the fact that we're totally screwed now in Afghanistan. Hello there, it is Eric Erickson. The phone number here is 877-973-7425. Let's go to the phones. Jerry, you're going to be up next. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you, Eric. Hey, real quickly, along this stray voltage analogy you were just talking about, think about this. Here's what the left has done, or Biden's done in the last month. We've had an Afghanistan debacle, a vaccine mandate, trying to pass a $3.5 trillion infrastructure bill. No apologies given, just moving forward. I mean, the right now, they don't even know where to begin. And if I'm Texas and other states, here's what I do. I'm going to make the left head spin. Texas should right now pass an immigration bill. They should pass a bill banning CRT. Give them a piece of their medicine in terms of what these people are doing, and don't apologize for it. Unfortunately, what I see the right always concerned about is, oh, we've got midterms coming up. We don't want to upset this voting block or that voting block. And you brought this up when Georgia passed their, I think, heartbeat bill, saying, hey, if they're going to lie about it, you might as well just get your money's worth and pass a whole bunch of other bills. And I think state legislators just see this and just do it, move forward, make their head spin, and not even give them time to think. And I just want to know your thoughts.
So, Jerry, I want to play this clip. Thank you very much for the phone call. There's a clip by Dan Patrick. I want to play for Dan Patrick, not the sports broadcaster Dan Patrick, but the lieutenant governor of the state of Texas. Listen to this.
The revolution has begun, a silent revolution by the Democrat Party and Joe Biden to take over this country. Tomorrow is Constitution Day. And folks, if you haven't read it, you need to read Article 4, Section 4 very quickly. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union and shall protect each of them against invasion and domestic violence and guarantee a Republican form of government. We need every state, every red state, because the blue ones won't do it, to send and invoke Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution to tell the president that we are being invaded. Now, invasion, properly defined by most, says it's an unauthorized, uninvited, unwelcomed incursion in your territory or property. This is not authorized by the state of Texas. It's not welcomed by the state of Texas or any other Republican state that I know, and they're not invited. And so every red state should invoke this clause now, because every red state is being impacted and the blue states apparently don't care. Laura, when I say a revolution has begun, they are allowing this year probably 2 million, that's who we apprehend, and maybe another million into this country. At least in 18 years, even if they all don't become citizens before then and can vote, in 18 years, if every one of them has two or three children, you're talking about millions and millions and millions of new voters. And they will thank the Democrats and Biden for bringing them here. Who do you think they're going to vote for? So this is trying to take over our country without firing a shot.
Well, listen, there's actually some compelling data out there, as Dan Patrick should know, that Latino Hispanic voters in Texas are moving to the GOP. And now there's data that it's happening in California as well. I want to spend some time on that in the Durham investigation when we come back. But programming note, at 2 o'clock, if you're listening live to Eastern or in delay, the third hour of the program, Chip Roy, the congressman from South Texas, good friend of mine, longtime friend of mine, has been down there to Del Rio, Texas, where now you got up to 10,000 people under a bridge, including a bunch of Haitians. And if you're wondering, wait a second, Haiti's an island nation. How did they wind up under a bridge in Texas? Yeah, the congressman and I are going to explore this and the invasion that is, and it is an invasion. We got to do something about it. We'll talk about it at the third hour of the program today. Stick around for that. You should have gotten a recipe yesterday, a grilled pork loin, and it's a good one. It is, and I there's even a modification in there from the rosemary garlic stuffing to ham and cheese. Oh, it's good. You can text the word recipe to 33777. If you want on the recipe list, you'll get a link back, put in your email address. You can click through and see all the recipes I put up on the radio show website if you want. If you want to call into the program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. It is Friday, so we're looser on the phone calls, so you can get through and help set the agenda. A couple of things I want you to know, though. At 2 o'clock, or I should say in the third hour, because some of you are listening to me on delay, the third hour of the program, Congressman Chip Roy is going to join me. He is from South Texas, represents the area that runs from San Antonio to Austin, and has been down to the border to Del Rio. He's a friend of mine, wanted to get him on to talk about it. In the second hour of the program, some of you know who Chris Blake is, Dr. Chris Blake. He is the president of Macon State College near me. He's a friend of mine. He's written a book on World War One, and I thought it was very intriguing and wanted to talk to him because one of the points he makes is that, believe it or not, in the beginning of the 20th century, fascism, communism, and Western liberal democracy, all three were new concepts. Monarchy was the primary governing concept up until then. And as the world went through convulsions in the run-up to World War One, fascism rose, communism rose, and Western liberal democracy rose. And for the last 100 years, liberal democracy has been really the governing principle for the Western world. And now suddenly, 100 years later, we're squabbling about all three again. So what lessons did we fail to learn along the way? Among others, I want to talk to him about it. He's got a new book out, and we will talk about it. Now, right now, I want to get back to the phones. Tom, I'm going to go to you next. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I had one question in reference to Afghanistan and the way the exit was handled. What are the chances that Biden's following up on what President Obama started several years ago?
Look, I think that it is the natural extension of what Obama did. What you need to understand, though, is that Barack Obama's generals, like Donald Trump's generals, talked him out of going all the way, of going the distance. And Joe Biden's generals tried to talk him out of what he did and couldn't talk him out of it. Joe Biden's generals couldn't deter him from doing what he did, and it fell into just absolute disaster, which is unfortunate, but totally predictable. The generals told him this would happen. And now, of course, they're trying to be loyal foot soldiers for Biden, and it's not going so well. All right. Yesterday on this program, it's kind of funny. I gave you guys an overview of a story out of Texas, and the story in particular was about in Texas, Hispanic voters, Latino voters, whichever you wish to call them, they're trending towards the GOP. Texas Monthly did a big story, and it turns out that Hispanic voters in South Texas, if you force them to identify as a race as opposed to an ethnicity, they identify as white. And they're embracing what the media views as whiteness, which is they're voting Republican. So at a time, Democrats thought demography was destiny and more Hispanic voters would make South Texas Democrat. It turns out more Hispanic voters is making South Texas more Republican. Well, now there's this from, of all places, NBC News. Here's the headline. Democrats warn of canary in the coal mine for Latino voters in California recall. Subtitle, while California Latinos voted to keep Governor Gavin Newsom in office, they did so by a smaller margin than Democrats have won in the past. California Governor Gavin Newsom trounced the effort to remove him from office in Tuesday's recall election, but the rosy result may obscure an erosion of support among Latino voters for Democrats that has some in the party worried about the future. Donald Trump got a historic number of Latino votes in 2020, and you can claim it was because of this or because of that, but it's not like Larry Elder broke through for these folks. There's something else going on, says Michael Trullo, a Democratic strategist based in Los Angeles, referring to the leading Republican candidate in the failed recall attempt. The former president made inroads with Latino voters in places like South Florida and the Rio Grande Valley in Texas last year. But many Democrats chalked up those results to the idiosyncrasies of the Latino population in those areas, Trump's unique persona, or wrinkles of holding an election during a pandemic. But in the first real-world test since the 2020 election, some data from California suggests the issue may be more widespread, a potential troubling sign for Democrats ahead of the 2022 midterms, when Latino voters will play a major role in the battle for the House in places like California. Democrats have long warned that they are taking support among minorities, including Black and Hispanic voters, for granted, assuming they will support liberals without doing enough work to win their backing. We're seeing something happen in blue state California, where a certain segment of the Latino population is trending in the wrong direction, Trujillo says. California Latino voters sided with Newsom and against the recall 60-40, according to the NBC News exit poll, a slightly smaller margin than Newsom and other Democrats have won in the past in California, especially among Latino men, and nearly identical to the 59-41 split among white voters. By contrast, black voters broke 83-17 in favor of Newsom, and Asian Americans backed the governor 64-36. In being elected governor 3 years ago, Newsom won 64% of the Latino vote. Both whites and Latinos saw a larger gender gap, with Latina women more likely to side with Newsom by 19 points and white women with the governor by 16 points. Still, Dorian Cowell, the director of civic engagement research at the nonpartisan Nalio Education Fund, the offshoot of the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials, cautioned against reading too much into the exit polls. Yeah, listen, exit polls are far more accurate than public opinion polling because exit polling itself is based on the actual people who are actually voting. They sample a whole lot of them. They keep track of the percentage of white, black, Hispanic, Asian people who vote. They adjust the proportions of the exit polling statistically. So you get a pretty representative snapshot of the opinions of the people who actually turned out to vote. Everyone historically pays attention to the exit voting. And I'm saying all the exit voting. You know, you have early exits, midday exits, late day exits. You can't pay attention to any one of those because they're not adjusted statistically. You have to pay attention to the composite of the exit results, where they combine the ones they took in the morning, the ones they took in the middle of the day, and the ones they took in the evening. And it looks like Latino voters, even in California, are drifting away from the Democrats. Now, not at as such an alarming rate as they are in places like Colorado and in Texas and in Florida, but they are. And it presents a problem for the Democrats. And I have a theory on this. It is different from what the media would have you believe. To summarize what the media is interpreting the Latino drift away from Democrats as, they interpret it as Democrats playing racial demographic politics are forcing people to pick and be defined by their races. Latino voters choose to be identified ethnically as Hispanic or Latino, racially as white people. And as a result, they are identifying with white people, and white people vote Republican, and so they are voting Republican. That's the way the media processes this. I think it's different. Brian Kemp is the governor of Georgia. He won 39% of the Hispanic vote in 2018 against Stacey Abrams. If Brian Kemp in Georgia gets it up to about 45% of the Latino Hispanic vote in Georgia in 2022, Democrats aren't going to be able to beat him in a close election. David Perdue, U.S. Senator from Georgia, who lost the runoff by about 90,000 votes to John Ossoff, he got about 40%, 40 to 42% of the Hispanic vote in Georgia. Why? Donald Trump, of course, got a significant chunk. Ron DeSantis got a significant chunk. Greg Abbott got a significant chunk in Texas in the last go-round. And then this last time, the white Republican congressional candidates in South Texas got a good chunk of Latino voters. What are they doing differently? Well, I would submit to you that Latino voters historically are immigrants to this country. Surprise! And as immigrants to the United States, they are focused on America and being an American. So when you have Democratic candidates who try to treat them as Latino voters, you're treating them as something other than an American voter. They want desperately to have the American dream. Here come Democrats telling them that they're oppressed by white people and they can't have the American dream. And meanwhile, the Latino voters are thinking, I can have the American dream. Also, it's impolite and politically incorrect to talk about it, but there actually is a significant, in parts of this country, strain of racism and racial dynamics between black and Hispanic voters. And black voters are entrenched within the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party largely pays more attention to them than to Hispanic voters. And the Hispanic voters of this country, they'd like a political party to pay attention to them, but not as Hispanic voters, as Americans. Republicans do a terrible job with their outreach. In Georgia, occasionally the Georgia Republican Party will hire someone to do Hispanic outreach, and it's some white dude in his 20s who learned Spanish from Rosetta Stone and shows up, says, hola, mi amigos. Nobody wants to pay attention to that guy. Just treat them like Americans. And what you do is in some cases, you do respect their differences. In some cases, English is a second language to them. So you go out, you speak to them in Spanish. You can't do that. Yeah, actually, you should. Reach them where they're at. Reach them in their life. But you know, you're not talking to them in Spanish about their issues as Hispanic immigrants. You're talking to them about, well, their moms, their dads, their doctors, their day laborers, their blue-collar workers. They got to pay taxes. They're culturally conservative. They don't like the transgender agenda that the left is pushing in their kids' schools. Overwhelmingly, they go to public schools. The public schools are failing to give them an education and are instead indoctrinating them. You talk to them about those issues. You talk to them about jobs. You talk to them about crime and safety. And guess what? They resonate. That was the secret of what Donald Trump did. Donald Trump did not go talk to Hispanic voters as Hispanic voters. He didn't even talk to them in Spanish. They did some Spanish PR issues. They did some targeting. They did some Spanish language mail pieces. But by and large, Donald Trump just talked to these people as Americans, as people who were hard workers, as people who needed a job, as people who saw loved ones go to jail. And it worked for him. And the Democrats, meanwhile, they're like, well, you know, these people, they come from countries with heavy-handed dictators. They're fleeing. They kind of like that heavy-handed. There's literally the New York Times trying to explain why Hispanic voters were flirting with Donald Trump was, well, they come from, they're fleeing countries with dictators, charismatic dictators. They kind of like a charismatic dictator. No, they're fleeing from that person. That was actually, you know, same with young black men flirting with Donald Trump as well, toxic masculinity and rap music. There was an actual analysis of the New York Times. It wasn't true. Turns out they wanted jobs. Donald Trump, with his criminal justice reform, got a lot of young black men out of prison. They liked him, that he got them out of jail and did an economy that he helped an economy that gave them jobs. They like this. The more Democrats play identity politics with the races, the worse off they're going to be. And they're so addicted to it, they can't help it. They can't stop it. And that actually helps Republicans. And we're seeing it in places like, of all places, California, Texas, Florida, Colorado, and the like. So keep on playing identity politics. Democrats, amazing what happens when you divide up people by the color of their skin. They think you're racist and don't like you. I got to tell you about Patriot Mobile. Speaking of Texas, it's a great Texas-based company. Patriot Mobile wants to be your cell phone carrier. They provide great coverage, quality coverage. In fact, if you go to patriotmobile.com, they have a map of their coverage, and they use the cell towers that the other companies use, so you don't have to worry about it. You're going to get coverage with Patriot Mobile. In fact, they can roll over your number. Now, I bought my new iPhone this morning, unlocked. It works on Patriot Mobile. What you do is you go to patriotmobile.com/Eric, or you can call 972-PATRIOT. If you call 972-PATRIOT, tell them I sent you. You get free activation using my name, but you're going to be talking to 100% U.S.-based customer service. Now, what sets them apart? Besides being the only Christian conservative cell phone provider in the country that shares your values, they give a portion of their profits to support the pro-life cause, to support the Second Amendment cause, to support veterans and first responders. They give discounts to veterans, first responders, and large households that need a lot of lines. You can save money with Patriot Mobile, and you can do business with a company that shares your values, so you don't have to worry about them giving your money to woke causes. What you do is you go to patriotmobile.com/Eric, patriotmobile.com/ERICK, or you call them 972-PATRIOT. You tell them I sent you, and they give you a discount with your, or they give you free activation, and you can even roll your existing phone number over to them or start over with a new number if you want to. This is essentially a monologue for one now, because I know that Shaney B is on the board at my flagship station, WSB, so I have to expand this for all of you. When I first started, I got my start the night an ice storm hit WSB Radio in Atlanta. And I was there stuck in the studio. Couldn't get back to my house. Had to one night sleep on the floor at the station because the roads in Atlanta were completely iced over. This was not the one in 2015 or so that were everything was snowed in. This was a bad ice storm, hit the city of Atlanta, took it out for about a week. You couldn't drive around, was having to walk back and forth to a hotel when I could get one. Shane became my board op over time, in large part because the very next week, my board op arrived. And I've now, Ted, I can't remember the guy's name, but I will never forget, I turned to the guy and I pointed for him to go to commercial break. And the last thing I saw was this guy falling over backwards, eyes rolled back up into his head, passed out. Never saw him again. He was fine. But had to be saved by a guy named Alan who came in and was able to get me to commercial break like 20 minutes after I should have gone to commercial break. But so Shane for a while became my board op, and then had been with Herman Cain, moved back to Herman. But while he was there, we had a caller, Scott, who has called this program in the last year. I didn't know it was possible. Scott just sent me an email. Shane, of all people on planet Earth, will appreciate this guy has emailed me. Now, this is a guy who back during the, Obama-McCain. No, that was 2000. No, it was, 2012 it would have been, because I went on radio. So it was Obama-Romney called in, was just bashing Mitt Romney on and on and on and on. And I said, so you're an Obama? Oh, no, I'd never vote for Barack Obama. Why? Well, because he's black. I was like, what? He said, well, I'm voting for David Duke. I was like, oh, this guy really is a racist. So naturally, he won't let him on the show. I just got an email from him about Afghanistan that we were always perpetually doomed to fail there. Why? Yes, because they weren't white.